Let's go ahead and start by one of you just starting with where you were born, and we'll go from there.
Why don't you start, because your family's been here for 120 some years. So.
Okay. My mother's father died in South Dakota, causing my grandmother and her three kids, including my mother, to move to the West Coast where her sister was.
Mm-hmm.
The girls all emigrated from Norway. Mm-hmm. And settled momentarily in Chehalis, where my father, who was born on Anderson Island in 1903, was working as a guard, if you want to call it that, at the what was then called the State Training School. And he was working in the chicken business and so forth, and on the side, he started a chicken business with grandmother's sister. Well, he met through the business at my mother, squired her, married her, and here I am.
Ta-da!
In the meantime, my grandmother's sister was married and adopted Gail.
Mm-hmm.
So we're adopted second cousins.
Uh-huh.
So when father moved to the island in the Depression, he lost his business. He came out to the island and got a job with my grandfather's old friend, C.B. Hopkins, who made my father the caretaker of Hopkins Ranch, which was the property between the two lakes and most of Lake Josephine. Then Grandmother Anderson had rented a place on Sandbeck Road, and later in 1936 purchased the property on Larson Road,
mm-hmm.
Which we still have. Gail and I took naps when her adopting mother would visit her sister, my grandmother, at Larson, and before then on the porch or on the when we were 2, 3, 4 years old.
Well, we were younger than that.
Yeah. So
because we're a year and a half apart in age.
Mm-hmm.
So, from babyhood on,
mm-hmm.
we were best friends and always had a lot of fun.
So she would visit the island in the summertime, and as we got big enough to have bicycles, we rode bikes, and we would, of course, bicycle up to the swimming hole, which was the Engvall place now.
Mm-hmm.
And we had his and hers huckleberry bushes where we changed. And the longest hour in human existence is the hour between lunch and the time you go swimming. And that, of course, was what my grandmother insisted upon. Of course, what she really wanted was an hour siesta after lunch, to keep us quiet and to rest.
But she had us totally convinced that if you went in that water 59 minutes after you ate, you'd sink to the bottom and die. 60 was okay. 59, no.
No way.
No way.
59 and 30 seconds would not work either.
No, it would not.
Very little slack there. And if we didn't want to ride a bicycle, why, it was to plead and cajole with Uncle Pliny to drive us up in the Model A two-door sedan.
Uh-huh.
And we'd go up there and swim for a couple, 3 hours. There'd be other kids there sometimes, sometimes not. There was a float out there, so it was a big deal when we first started to be able to swim out to the float and had a diving board on and be brave enough to dive off the end of the diving board. And
oh,
like that.
Jerry had goggles that he could see underwater, swimming goggles.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so envious because, the reason he had them was because his eyes were very sensitive to the water. And I thought that was, once in a while he'd let me wear them, but not too often, but it was okay. But I was so envious of those. What else? You had a sailor cap, one of those white things. And he didn't let anybody wear that very much either. But I got to wear that and hold his BB gun, which was totally...
That was the
same. Yeah, I was. Oh, I'll tell you. You know, even then, at like age 8, 10,
mm-hmm.
you know, he was...
So where would you like us to go from here?
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to hear more about the swimming hole.
Well,
do you have any funny stories about being young and silly?
I have a story about Viv Johnson.
Viv Gordon.
Gordon.
Yeah. Okay.
I think I must have been probably 8 or 10.
Mm-hmm.
And Viv was a little bit older, not much. But she was down there, and you know, Viv talks with her hands.
Mm-hmm.
And she had on 2 rings, a red stone and a blue stone.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember admiring those rings because I liked rings. And she was waving her hands around, and they both flew into an area which we didn't swim in because it was kind of mucky on the bottom, into that mud. Well, I spent the whole rest of the afternoon trying to find those for her. Never did.
Never did.
No, never did. But I still remember her shrieking and saying, my rings, and she'd lost them in the mud. But
the whole afternoon spent trying to find them.
Yeah.
The swimming hole was a real gathering place in that there was always an end-of-school picnic,
mm-hmm.
and that was more or less an island potluck,
mm-hmm.
and the same with 4th of July, and usually in June and July after work, after haying and things like that, the whole families for that matter would come up and have a before supper dip at the lake and so forth. And Junior Johnson, John Johnson,
mm-hmm. my neighbor,
had at one time removed the chassis from an old car, whatever it was, I don't know, and made a bug with his dad was a plaster, so he used lath and canvas,
mm-hmm.
and made a car out of it, and a nifty airfoil type car it was at that.
Mm-hmm.
And of course had without a muffler, very little, so it was noisy, and he and the canvas boys would rat around in that and so forth,
mm-hmm.
and also, as I recall, it was Earl Parr that had gotten a similar bug. It was painted, as I recall, yellow and red,
mm-hmm.
and it was a Model T, as I recall, but it too would it was a sort of a Bugatti shape,
mm-hmm.
it, you know, with a boat tail and things like that. It was also a major attraction, and as I recall, it had a great huge fire alarm bell. The bell itself was probably 14, 18 inches in diameter,
mm-hmm.
and it really clanged when he'd hit the switch for it.
Yeah.
And of course, he'd come down the bumpy road to the swimming hole with the bell clanging,
mm-hmm.
and we all knew that Earl was showing up.
Funny.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, the swimming hole was just a gathering place most of the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think we have some pictures of it.
Yeah.
Of us kids standing on the float somewhere. I'm gonna have to go through.
We island kids kind of looked down our noses at the mainlanders are coming over to use our swimming hole.
Nope.
As that we still do.
Yes.
Don't you though?
I sure do.
Mm-hmm.
I won't deny it.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny.
But how the times change.
So your family worked on the Hopkins farm.
Yeah.
So when did that start? How old were you?
I was born in St. Joseph's Hospital in July 1930,
mm-hmm.
and came immediately to the island. The folks, of course, the Depression was 29,
mm-hmm.
and the folks were married in 29, and Dad and Mom planted those two sets of trees. Those are actually, each one is a set of 3 trees,
mm-hmm.
In front of the home place.
House.
And they planted those, on the event of their marriage or shortly thereafter,
mm-hmm.
and they immediately went to the Lakes place, to Hopkins Ranch.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly when he started, I don't know, but of course, having gotten married and having a kid on the way and the direction hitting and losing his chicken business, things like that, and losing his job in the state training school, everything collapsed for him.
Mm-hmm.
So
real fast.
Here was home.
And he got $25 a month
for working at
Hopkins. And he would plant a garden. Hopkins lived east of the mountains,
mm-hmm.
in Spokane,
yeah. and he would plant the garden for them. He would tend the animals that they had. I shared. They had a cow.
And they had four cows and a whole bunch of chickens. And
yeah, I remember that house. It was a great house.
We were burned out in 1933. As a matter of fact, the story of that, if somebody continue with that, uh-huh, is that it was about the day or the day before the Volstead Act was repealed, mm-hmm, which was the Prohibition Act. And at that time, some pilots had to make a forced landing on what is now in the vicinity of Verdi Sturm's house and things like that. It was a 5-acre field at that time. So they set the airplane down in the 5-acre field. Mm-hmm. And they had their problems, and they were working on it. But the Volstead Act was repealed, and the folks went to Ernie Erich's, which was then your neighbor's, Johnson Landing, for party. But they left the airplane mechanics there. I think probably it was in the autumn of the fall of the year, or winter of the year, I'm not sure when. Anyway, they left the airplane people at the house and told them about the dampers or something like that on the house. To make a long story short, the house burned down while the folks were at the party.
The Hopkins house or your
house?
Your house.
Our house was separate,
right,
from the Hopkins house.
Right.
And so that was burned totally to the ground. Our dog, a part collie, part shepherd, part wolfhound named Monty, had been left stuck inside, and he was underneath the porch steps when they got back, and he was singed, and forever after his voice was cracked from having barked so hard and so long to get out.
Uh-huh.
But that Monty was about the only thing, a few pictures were about the only thing that were saved from there. So
yeah,
after getting started with a family depression by having another slam, but being burned out, was a major trauma. A later anecdote about that is that I guess I was about four or five, and there were boathouses on both lakes, and I was going down to Lake Florence to play in the water, which 3 or 4 year old kids must do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Monty would stand in my way, and I recall beating on his back to get around him, and he wouldn't move. He wouldn't let me go.
Mm-hmm. And no one was there to watch.
I think Mama told him to take care of Jerry.
Something like that. But anyway, that was the story there.
That's funny.
Well, there was another story about Monty that was funny too, because your folks had gone to town, and I don't know how old you were at this point, but probably in your before teens. And Monty was left home.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Monty loved to tree anything that was furry and ran.
Mm-hmm.
So he got, I guess it was a coon, up a tree.
Mm-hmm.
Probably about 10 minutes after the folks left, yeah, and they were going to be gone all weekend. And that dog, his mother said that when they got back, that dog could not bark. He was so hoarse, and he had worn a furrow around the tree.
All weekend, running around the tree.
And the coon was still up there. So Dad came out and shot him out of the tree.
Right.
But
that was a poop puppy, I'll tell you.
No. She said his voice was never the same,
yeah,
after that, even. You know, the fire did bad enough, but this barking for this entire weekend just did him in.
Puppy. That's funny.
I remember we had an airplane ride at age 10.
Mm-hmm.
They were living at the lakes, and we had come out, my adopted mother had come out to visit his grandmother, her sister. And somebody from Chehalis, I believe, came in with a float plane.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A tail craft, remember that?
Oh, well, you would, being a pilot. But I just was in awe. So this thing landed on the lake. It taxied on up to the boathouse right down below Hopkins. And we have pictures of Jerry and I hanging over the pontoons.
We'd been swimming.
We'd been swimming, of course. And for some reason or other, I still, to this day, do not believe that my adopted mother allowed me a ride in that plane.
Mm-hmm.
We both got a ride, and I'll tell you, thrill number 973. It was absolutely marvelous.
The second reinforcement to my becoming a pilot, because the first one was when I mentioned those guys that flew the airplane, landed the airplane. I recall being set on the wing of this two-wing biplane, monoplane, biplane, And I'm running up the engine. Well, I didn't like the engine. I cried and cried, but I wouldn't get off the airplane. I wanted to stay there. It was fascinating, but I didn't like the sound.
You didn't like the sound.
We didn't like sound.
And, of course, then this ride, and also where, well, basically where Clover Park Airfield is, Votech, and things like that, was Mueller Harkins Airport.
Mm-hmm.
And so the folks would go to town and do the shopping and things like that when they had to or could have had money enough to do so. I'd always bug them to stop by Mueller Harkins for a while so we'd watch the airplanes come and go.
Very neat. Mm-hmm. That's cool.
I remember that always airplanes were important. I remember building model airplanes.
What do you remember about growing up in the Depression? And
I don't remember ever being feeling poor.
Mm-hmm. That's just how everybody was.
Yeah, we had chickens, matter of fact, my adopted mother had 3,000 chickens.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that kind of went belly up during the Depression. But we always had chickens to eat. We had a cow.
Mm-hmm.
We grew vegetable garden, canned a lot of stuff. I don't remember feeling poor.
Mm-hmm.
Or hungry.
Mm-hmm.
I think we were probably more fortunate than a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Because we weren't city people. We didn't have to depend on a city job or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have some holes in my shoes, but I never had to put cardboard in the bottoms or anything. And I don't know why, I probably inherited it from my mother. I never liked to go barefoot.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I did.
Yeah. And she'd go running across the stubble hay field, no problem, and I'd be ooching and ouching.
For me. Yeah. No, I don't remember
one
that.
One kind of a funny story, yeah. You know where Viv Gordon used to live? On Larson Road, actually where in the vicinity of where Kathy Isaacson lives now.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That was where Viv was raised, that area there, Tin City and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
The Johnsons and my folks were real good friends and card playing buddies and things like that. And Viv and I were about the same age, and so we were, of course, buddies.
Mm-hmm.
And another little aside is that she had a brother who was the middle child called Doug Gerald, or Jerry. And, of course, it was Johnny the oldest.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that Jerry was Big Jerry, and I was Little Jerry.
Mm-hmm.
For the longest time. I never really liked being little.
Little. Never liked being Little Jerry.
But the story is that I was bored around the house. And my mom was busy doing things, and Dad was in the garden or what. I don't know. It was summertime. And so I thought, well, I'll go down and see Viv.
Mm-hmm.
So Monty and I hiked on out, and we got down there. And I imagine by the time I got there, because quite a stroke for walking, mm-hmm. especially for a little kid, Mom was rather frantic. And I didn't realize this until later, but when I showed up, Alice says, oh, hi, and how are you, where's Viv? And so I found Viv, but she called the folks and says, you know, Jerry's down here. But also, I think at the same time, that relieved Mother, but I think Father had also got looking for dog prints. And he followed Monty's footprints as mine,
mm-hmm.
all the way down. And then when he got to the corner of Larson Road up here in Yeoman, I was being sent home. I was sent said that I had better go home because my folks were worried about me. So, well, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm muttering along, and I'm just about opposite Cyril's place.
Mm-hmm.
And I see Dad coming around the corner. And I see he's got a switch in his hand. And I said, I called out, I see you, Daddy, I see your switch. Well, I got turned around and accelerated home a little bit. It was not a vicious beating or anything like that, but I got reminded that I should have done that.
That you should have been aware of where you were going, or at least telling people where you were going.
Was that the occasion where you made the comment about to hell with the Johnsons, to hell with the Burns?
I think so.
Yes.
I think so.
You weren't very old, I don't think, at that point.
Oh, that's funny. What was it like for Munchkins to be able to go and play in boats and do all that kind of stuff? Living on an island, that's got to be just cool.
It was cool.
It was just what you did. The most difficult thing I had to do was learn to swim 50 feet before you take the boat out, and that was, I wanted to go fishing when I was five. Mm-hmm. And Dad says, okay, well, you can go when you can swim 50 feet. Okay, well, that didn't work, so I had to just go with him when they fished. Mm-hmm. But I'd go down and catch minnows and things like that. I had a little hook and worm and catch minnows and mm-hmm. put them in a bucket, then we'd all go bass fishing in the other lake. Josephine was the bass lake at the time. Mm-hmm. So, in the summer I was six, boy, by golly, then I got my 50 feet, mm-hmm. and I got my rod, and I got my boat permit, and I was gone. as kids do, all by yourself, mucking around and so forth. Well, I'd slip off logs and I'd get wet, and I'd come back to the house and say, hi, Mom, here's your drowned rat.
That's funny.
Mm-hmm. I remember, too, coming out, and at that point, I remember the little house that your grandmother lived in, right above, just up from Ivel's, mm-hmm. sort of up the hill from where Papa Bear mm-hmm. used to live. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to me when I was tiny, three or so, that was the longest house in the world inside. I thought the room was terribly long. Well, it was just a little tiny thing.
You can still see it.
Yeah. It's still up there, mm-hmm. but it's kind of trashed now. But you'd walk in. I remember the barn was five times bigger than the house.
Always.
And we have pictures, too. I ought to get some of those pictures out for you. I'm going to see if I'm going to see if I can't find them. Because we have pictures of both of us at that house and mm-hmm. at this house down here, and a lot of the relatives, because we had the same relatives.
Right.
But anyway, I remember walking into that house, and there was a long room, and it was kind of kitchen and,
kitchen.
I guess, dining room.
A little dinette.
But then you went up a step, mm-hmm. and that to me was terribly intriguing.
The biggest step in the world. We were so big we could make that step.
Oh gosh, yes. And that went up to the bedrooms.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And
the step was only about 8 inches high.
You know, right. And they had
a
bath with a path, of course. Mm-hmm. So there was no plumbing in the house. An outdoor pump, I remember.
Yeah, and cold water.
And cold water. And I remember somebody daring me to put my tongue on the pump handle, and I think I did it once, just once. I think it was probably you that did it too, turkey. But we went down here. Well, go play on the beach. You know, mm-hmm. the adults wanted to sit around and talk adult talk.
Right.
But we were never bored. We would build elaborate forts sandcastle type things and embellish them with. Clamshells and agates and all kinds of wonderful mm-hmm. stuff.
And well, we'd sneak out a few matches and cook in a little tiny fire, maybe no more than 4 or 5 inches across.
With rocks around it on the beach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And put this big horse clamshell mm-hmm. on there with salt water. Then we'd go find ourselves a little crab and poke him in there and cook him. Yes. We never ate him. You know, we just like to see him turn red.
Writhed a little bit too, right?
Yes, yeah. Oh, they writhed beautifully.
Oh, that's funny. How about, did you guys ever go and play on Eagle Island or anything like that? Were you allowed to do that when you were young?
Yeah, we did. I remember going to Eagle.
But we, at that time, there's so many clams in front of the house. Mm-hmm. And
we didn't need to.
We didn't really need to, but I think we went over there to look at the light
mm-hmm.
and so forth, but...
Your folks used to go over there and pick up that shell that gets kind of really small and crushed,
barnacle.
The barnacle shells, mm-hmm. and bring them back for their chickens.
Oh.
They use the, they have the calcium in them and salt, too, which mm-hmm. the chickens liked. And in fact, I did that for when we had our chickens mm-hmm. here. A little bit, I'd go down and pick up a lot of those shells. But Eagle was, there's one, that one spot right across from you
mm-hmm.
that has the nice white beach.
Yeah, that's still there.
And they would go and get their shell.
That's interesting. I never really thought about that.
It was a good source of calcium for them, and it worked just fine.
How about the Indian burial ground that was there, or supposedly there. Did you guys hear much about
it? I don't remember hearing anything about it.
Never heard anything about it?
No.
There's some arrowheads around, but they're always so scarce, and there's so much undergrowth and things like that, that I had better things to do than plow around the dirt.
Well, your Uncle Rupert used to get arrowheads down below here. Mm-hmm. And he had, I remember as a kid, he had a shoebox full of arrowheads. And I think they all got destroyed in the fire when the home place burned in 84.
A story about the arrowheads, I think, where that little gully is there, but by Arlene's and so forth. I'm not sure there's a stream there or not. Mm-hmm. But that tells of I think it was the Squaxin and Indians coming from the island on their way to Puyallup for salmon fishing and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is about a halfway point with them. They come in their canoes and they camp out here.
Mm-hmm.
And language barrier and things like that. Mm-hmm. And to make a long story short, they'd trade salmon for grandma's homemade bread.
Oh, really?
And I don't know if how it worked out, whether they took the bread and so forth, or mm-hmm. how it was offered, or whatever, I don't know the bartering of it.
Mm-hmm.
Dad didn't get really that involved with it, but because it was a tale from his childhood.
Right.
So you lose a lot in translation.
Mm-hmm. Translation and time.
Yeah, and time. But
what did his mother think about all that?
I think she was a little afraid of them.
I think she was a little apprehensive, but she didn't. There wasn't much she could do. She had an older daughter and three boys, so mm-hmm. and they were probably hanging around the house. So she had seven children altogether.
Mm-hmm.
So there'd be people around, and I think basically the Indians were harmless anyway.
Mm-hmm.
They're just very childish and naive, and when they see something, they want it, and mm-hmm. if they want it, they go get it.
Mm-hmm.
If you have two, they'll take one, or maybe both of them,
mm-hmm.
and so forth. But that's how the arrowheads been.
Wow, that's neat.
But your Grandpa Berg was an amazing man.
Oh, really?
I barely remember him. I remember he was short and barrel-chested, and he had hands like hams.
Mm-hmm.
And he
had a mustache.
Like Vernon.
And he slurped that coffee, and the coffee stained his mustache.
Yes, but he did so much. I mean, he logged all of course this where we are, that field was all full of trees when he got here, because he homesteaded a quarter section, which is 160 acres or something. But he used to tell, Dad used to tell the story about 4th of July, that you probably heard it at school, or maybe he came up to talk to you when you were a little kid.
No.
Oh, okay. Anyway, that's the way the kids knew 4th of July was there, because he'd go out and he'd stick some dynamite under one of these stumps, which he had to get out of the ground anyway, and he'd blow the stump out of the ground.
I saw that one time, maybe 4, 5, 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
That's funny.
But he planted a huge garden. He made his kids shoes. We still have some of the lasts that belonged to his shoemaking mm-hmm. kit. He always managed to make toys for the kids at Christmas time. He would take his vegetables and row them across mm-hmm. to the mainland to Stillicum.
Come and take your interurban into town.
And sell them.
Wow.
And his feed and things like that for the animals, before there was a ferry, would come in by barge or vessel of some sort. And Dad tells of him picking up 2 120-pound sacks of feed and walking from the shore up to the barn.
Yes, to that very strong man. Very strong man.
Heavy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Jeez,
that's a long walk too.
That's long.
And uphill.
Yeah.
All the way.
And we have a picture of the home place with manicured hedges and garden. It was just gorgeous.
Yeah, where those trees are, he had a privet hedge on both sides of the road, the trail going straight
leading
down
up to the house.
And the lawn was mowed like Kenny has it, and I recall as a youngster, my cousins and I somersaulting down the hill.
Wow. Wow, what an awful lot of work.
It was a tremendous amount of work. I don't know how the man found enough hours in the day.
Do it all.
And then he had seven kids.
And he had, well, the on the other side of the driveway here was the first chicken house, mm-hmm. and it was the same size as this chicken house. And Dad helped build it in 1930 when he had come back from the training school.
Mm-hmm.
So the chicken house that's still here is a replica of the other one. And as a youngster, I recall both of them being full of chickens. And of course, it was.
I think your grandma worked awful hard, too.
Yeah.
With seven kids, all that laundry and every
yeah,
all the meals, I couldn't imagine. Oof.
Yeah.
When you work outside like that too, you don't just eat a sandwich either.
No. I think they were good hearty meals.
Yeah.
Wow. That just seems like an immense amount of work.
Real pioneering people.
Definitely. So do you remember any of or hear stories about the grocery boats or anything that would come?
Yeah, I think it was the Indian and the Chinook. There were three of them.
Mm-hmm. Levon was...
That was Ernie's boat.
Okay, that was Ernie's. I'm sorry.
But the ferry dock, mm-hmm. the original ferry dock, was designed that way with the dock at an angle to the main dock so that the ferry could come in and make the turn for vehicles to make the turn, but so that they call the produce, the commercial vessels
mm-hmm.
could land side by side, or side to the dock, because they had elevators,
mm-hmm.
and so they could run the elevator up and down and come to the edge no matter what the tide was.
Oh,
so they'd run the elevator up to the edge of the dock,
mm-hmm.
and they had a ramp and hand trucks, and that's how Ernie got his gasoline for the store,
mm-hmm.
and. Of course, everything else that he had in the store came in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Earlier on, he had this vessel, the Vaughan, and he brought the groceries back, the groceries and things like that back and forth. But the people produced here, he'd take in town and bring back.
Mm-hmm.
I remember rowing down to Johnson's Landing when it was Ernie's store.
Mm-hmm.
And climbing up the ladder mm-hmm. to get into the store with our nickel or three pennies or whatever it was we had, and press your nose against the candy counter, and took a long time to decide.
Because there weren't that many pennies.
There weren't that many pennies, but
we had to make sure
we get the right kind that lasted a long time.
Right.
Yeah, let's see what else.
She accuses me, and I'm not sure if it's right or not.
It was right.
we'd take turns because we were both kids and didn't make that much difference. And I'd row one way and she'd row the other way.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she accused me of rowing with the tide and making sure to row against
the tide.
He did.
It took me until I was 15 years old to figure out that he was rowing with the tide and I was rowing against it. That's why
every
I was having
time.
Yes, and that's why I was having such a bad time. I just thought he was being chivalrous and said, I will row one way.
Right.
Right.
Sounds like you were quite the prankster.
He was.
Whatever.
That's funny. What kind of stuff did they carry in the stores then? Do you remember?
I don't remember. I think it was a little bit of everything.
Mm-hmm, just like
really,
that.
It was.
I remember looking up and seeing like kerosene lamps.
Mm-hmm.
It was a hardware store.
And it was a hardware store.
People on the island.
Rope.
Had.
He had a great big pickle barrel. I remember.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, the candy counter was our main concern.
He had some meats, I think, that he came.
It seemed to be cheese. I remember cheese.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. It was maybe a little 7-8 foot long regular display case, cooler display case.
Mm-hmm.
I think, he had an electric plant.
Mm-hmm.
There was no electricity at that time, so he had an electric plant, and that's how he ran the cooler and mm-hmm. so forth. But the thing, Ernie was a machinist as well as a mechanic,
mm-hmm.
and the main part of the building was his machine shop, and he had one electric motor, large electric motor, and he ran a lathe. I don't know what other things he had. A drill press. He had numerous things that you see over here at the White's now. Some of the old equipment. He ran with belts and pulleys. And he'd have shifting levers that he'd shift the pulley from one, or shift the belt from one pulley to another to get a new implement to use.
Well, he was an amazing man.
Wow, ran everything off that one motor.
Yeah, mm-hmm. with belts and pulleys and blocks and shivs and
wow,
so forth.
That's neat.
It was incredible.
Mm. Wow, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Well, let me think. I have something I want to give you after, well, not give to you, but I will loan it to you, mm-hmm. and you can make copies of it.
Okay.
I have a few stories that are written by Ruth Owen, Somerville Owen, who was a teacher 1931-32.
Mm-hmm.
She lives in University Place. She's 97 years old, has a mind like a steel trap still. She's very frail. She was great friends. She and her husband were great friends with Jerry's parents,
mm-hmm.
and I think your dad was on the school board or something when mm-hmm. she came out and became teacher.
She stayed at Warner's.
She stayed at Warner's place.
Which is now where Hicks, somewhere between Hicks and Schramm.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, she wrote for me several of her experiences when she first came to the island, how she learned to drive on the island. And they're just priceless. She also gave me some poems she's written just recently. I usually talk to her once or twice a week on the phone, just make sure she lives alone, still in her own house. Very frail, but her mind is just... She can recite poems that she taught her first class when she was like 17 and started to teach.
Wow.
That's
amazing.
It is amazing.
I don't know if Fennish Line was her first school, but it was...
No, it wasn't. She taught around Tenino somewhere, I believe, at first,
mm-hmm.
but it was close.
Yeah.
Wow.
But I will let you take those and read them.
Where you really want to go, so...
Oh, that's okay, that's fine.
That's yeah, fine. A little bit, but...
I might have to see if I can contact her, too.
Yes.
That would be great.
She loves to talk.
That'd be
you
great.
Call Ruth and you listen to Ruth for,
mm-hmm. for
an hour and a half.
Right.
Actually, it would be great if you could go to a home.
With a definite project, where you'd just be close in her arms.
Oh, she would love you to death. She loves to talk about the old times.
And I've taken her. Academically interested is even more precious.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
She was a teacher for over 60 years.
Wow.
And she retired, then she went back to teaching. But I would, when she was well enough or, you know, agile enough, would take her up to school.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids would all ask her questions about what it was like to be in the one-room schoolhouse. And,
mm-hmm.
You went there, your dad went there.
Wow.
And she tells tales about, sending the kids with a milk can to bring back the next day because everyone had a cow.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the kids didn't have hot lunches. So she'd make cocoa for them on the little round stove.
She'd put the milk in the stove.
Yeah. And when she told the kids up here that was the one thing they remembered about the cocoa making, and wondered why Mrs. Ritchie didn't do that.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So what was school like that like for you guys out here?
Well, I didn't go to school out here.
Well, you went out.
He did.
Well, it was one room and eight grades, and the teacher sat in the back of the room with a desk, and. As I recall, there were two, maybe 5-6 foot benches of the old park bench type, the sort of rounded seat and so forth, slatted, iron ends. And she would conduct grades there. And so you would, when she'd call you, well, you go back for your session.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd, I recall, standing by her desk and trying to read C Spot Run.
Mm-hmm.
And in later years, she'd have some of the older kids in their class. And of course, I had a rubber ear listening to them too, and then she'd ask them questions, and now the students there knew it. I raise my hand. There was time for study, and I wouldn't call them recitations, but there was a brief, if you want to call it that. There was assignments that you did in school. There really wasn't homework,
mm-hmm.
but and then you'd be given time to read what was assigned, and then you go back and discuss it and so forth. I guess there were tests. There were tests. I don't really recall tests, but mm-hmm. I don't recall being apprehensive. Maybe that's why I don't
remember the tests. But, mm-hmm.
I remember one incident in the first grade, and there, of course, was a blackboard.
Mm-hmm.
And I was left-handed. And so, as you're supposed to do with young kids, you know, write on the blackboard the sentence or do something with the sentence. So I sat with my left hand right, and I changed my left hand to the right hand. And it was never very good. And so I said, okay, now, Jerry, you write this on the board with your left hand. Okay, now you write that same thing on the board with your right hand. Okay, Jerry, now which one is better? I guess with my right hand. Okay, from now on, you write with your right hand.
That's funny.
So I still shotgun with my left hand.
You still eat with your left hand.
And I bat right-handed. I bowl left-handed.
Okay.
I golf right-handed.
Wow, that's funny.
And, there was, when I got there was Lowell Johnson and I think Bob Eric and...
Ralph Christensen.
Ralph and the...
Cannons
boys.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all there about to leave. Oh, and even, I'm not sure if Bob Cannon was there as well or not. But I was a little kid and they were there.
They were the big kids, huh?
Oh, you betcha. And the only sports we played was work-up baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And being a little kid, I was always in the outfield and never got a chance to bat, so I don't care for baseball to this day for that. and we went from I think around 13 or so is the maximum number of kids in school to two. One was the year that was two. I think was my seventh grade or part of it. Roselle Parr and I were the only two kids in school.
Wow.
And we were in the same grade.
Wow. Well, that makes it much easier for the teacher.
Oh yeah,
And Rosella was a relative of Agnes, Rupert's wife.
Yeah, she was. Agnes's youngest sister.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's really neat. Huh. Let's see. So, where from like you're talking about? You've talked about like your 8 or 10 years. How about your teens? Your preteens and your teens.
Well,
We had, as we'd come up from the beach, we had the a big old huckleberry bush, and we'd have a kiss behind the huckleberry bush before we'd come in.
We dated when we were in high school. Uh-huh. I went to Annie Wright,
and, I was
so,
in Clover Park.
And he was at Clover Park.
Mm-hmm.
And,
it was never really, really serious, but I was just figuring out what a kiss was and so forth.
Yeah, mm-hmm. But then we both went off and married someone else and for 25 years.
But my preteens were pretty much... started in Steilacoom because we moved off the island in 43 when I was 13.
Mm-hmm.
So most of it was with Clover Park and so forth. Clover mm-hmm. Park was a junior senior high school at the time.
What was your family doing then, your parents?
Okay, the war came along and Dad was of an age where he really couldn't be in the military,
mm-hmm.
but he was told to get a war central job.
Uh-huh.
That's what on the island was not considered war central.
Mm-hmm.
So he got a job at Chambers Creek.
Mm-hmm.
And I recall that we had cows at the time, and mother was milking, and he would come home on the last boat, which I think was leave here at 5 o'clock, get over there at 5:30, and get back here at 6 or so.
Mm-hmm.
So mother would do most of the milking, I would try to milk and strip and things like that. Stripping means finishing off the last little bit of the milk out of the cow.
Mm-hmm.
And then, even though I was 12 and 13 years old, we had a 31 Model A. And when mother needed the car for things, you know, shopping on the island or whatever, well, she'd take Dad to work, caught the first boat. But sooner or later, I got to drive.
Mm-hmm.
So I would drive down big time, Drive the Model A down, pick up Dad at the ferry.
At the ferry dock. Mm-hmm.
But, where were you?
As far as, when you were 13 when you moved off the island?
Yeah, yeah.
And you went to Clover Park. So
yeah.
Well, when you moved off the island, did your parents change jobs, or you just...
Well, yeah, okay, that's where I was. In that then it became impossible, really, for... And the work we were doing, Gail mentioned we were getting $25 a month at the time. I think at one point in the maybe 39, that was raised to 35.
Wow.
Ooh. And before Dad quit, well, I was up to $50 a month.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that really wasn't happening, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just because I was time for high school anyway, the decision was just to move off and be done with it. So
mm-hmm.
He got the Chambers Creek job, and then we moved into a house just back of where Dad later bought and where we built.
Mm-hmm.
There at Frederickson College in Steilacoom.
Mm-hmm.
But it was the 13th of November, I recall, and I was pushing my bike up the hill, and that was my first night in town.
Wow.
In my house, yeah.
That's neat that you remember that.
But my first job came shortly after that, because up at the top of the hill, we were renting from a fellow named Herman Gowell.
Mm-hmm.
And his house and farm were at the top of